From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, John Kerry is privately working to salvage his Iran nuclear deal. And President Trump, well, he's not happy. President Trump is also set to make an announcement on the Iran deal tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk about that with Congressman Ted Poe of Texas in just a moment. And tomorrow, voters in West Virginia, Ohio, North Carolina, and Indiana head to the polls in some key races. Well, if you live in those states, here's the question for you. Are you ready? Editor-in-Chief of Ballotpedia, Scott Rasmussen, will be here with the details. Also tomorrow, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom will officially release their 2018 report, which highlights egregious state and non-state religious freedom violators. FRC's Travis Weber, director of our Center for Religious Liberty, will join me with an overview of the report. If you miss anything on your way home, you can catch it all later at the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right. Interesting things happening on the Iran nuclear deal, which President Trump has until May 12th to make a decision on, but he's announced that he will have a announcement to make on that tomorrow afternoon. John Kerry, former Secretary of State, has been busy working his Rolodex of international contacts to try to salvage the deal. Is he working at cross purposes with the Trump administration? Joining me now to talk about it, Congressman Ted Poe, who represents the 2nd Congressional District of the Lone Star State of Texas. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk to you.
Now, Congressman, you serve on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and you have a role to play as Congress provides oversight, but it's up to the president to negotiate deals, oftentimes ratified, supposedly, if they're treaties, ratified by the Senate. But the president is the one that really dictates foreign policy. A former Secretary of State working at cross purposes with the president on the Iran nuclear deal, is that problematic?
Absolutely. John Kerry has no business poking his nose into this situation at all, whether it's with people in the Trump administration or with foreign countries. John Kerry sold America out, gave away the courthouse, gave away the mineral rights in this Iranian deal, and we are learning more about how awful it was. And it is not his place as a former Secretary of State to interfere with this president's decision on whether to stay in the deal or not. So I think it's improper conduct on the part of John Kerry.
I find it very interesting, if not ironic, that former General Flynn, who was the national security pick for the president, was criticized for having conversations prior to taking office, prior when Obama was still in office, saying that he violated the law for engaging in these conversations that could have undermined the Obama administration in their final days, violating the Logan Act. It would appear to me that this is a more, I don't know what Flynn was involved in there, but they were coming in trying to get up to speed. Here it looks like they're trying to preserve something they did because this administration doesn't want it.
Exactly. John Kerry is trying to preserve Obama's legacy, and he's doing it now as a private citizen. It is not his place. I think it's improper. It's certainly improper to try to influence this administration, people who work in the administration under the guidance of President Trump to go around President Trump's decision-making in trying to influence other people in the administration not to agree with President Trump if he tends to back out of it. So it's very ironic, but it's all about protecting Obama's legacy and protecting, really, Kerry's legacy as well in having America sign on to this this very bad deal that we signed on to along with the Europeans.
Congressman Poe, the information that came out about 2 weeks ago now, well, actually just a little over a week ago, from Israel in terms of what their intelligence community had gathered regarding the violations from Iran. John Kerry dismissed that, saying, oh, we knew that. That's why this deal is so important and why it must be preserved.
I'm sorry that I chuckled because, Netanyahu has told us that the Iranians were violating the non-proliferation agreements before they even got into this deal. They are continuing to develop nuclear weapon capability. They are developing intercontinental ballistic missiles. And I tend to believe what Netanyahu and his intelligence agencies have said, and it's more of a reason why we should get out of the deal as opposed to stay in the deal. The Iranians came to the table because the sanctions were working, and now we lifted the sanctions. I think they are still violating at least the spirit, maybe the letter of the deal, and continuing to develop nuclear weapon capability. Certainly, even though intercontinental ballistic missiles was not part of the deal, they are moving forward on that. And so I think the president would be certainly within his authority and justification to roll back the agreement of the deal and re-establish sanctions in some areas, like sanctioning the Iranian Central Bank, not maybe bringing in all the sanctions, but going right after the money. I just think that John Kerry's is probably surely shouldn't have anything to do with what the United States does in the future on this. And like I said, I think the president would be justified based upon the information that he has to say, no, you have violated the deal, Ayatollah, and the United States is going to then put the sanctions back on, especially the financial sanctions, not allow American companies to do business with the Iranian bank, and not allow the Iranian Central Bank any money to run through the United States or have any companies involved in dealing with the Iranian Central Bank. We'll see what the Europeans do if that decision is made.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. My guest in this first segment, Congressman Ted Poe, represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, I believe the House Foreign Affairs Committee has a hearing set tomorrow regarding the Iran challenge.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're having a hearing tomorrow morning and the Foreign Affairs Committee to discuss this very issue as to what's the status of Iran's nuclear capability. Have they violated the treaty? Should the United States move forward with sanctions? Should they not? So, yes, we're having a hearing on this very issue because it's an important issue that the United States must not allow Iran to develop a nuclear weapon, a capability, and certainly not be able to deliver them. As the Ayatollah has said more than once, he wants to destroy Israel, and he wants to destroy the United States. I believe him when he says that. John Kerry referred to that as just rhetoric, but I believe to it. I believe it when he says it. And so if it means we have to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal and put the squeeze on Iran through some sanctions, I think that's a good idea. We're not going to be able to get our $150 billion in hard currency that the last administration gave to the Iranians on the runway in Europe, but we can at least maybe prevent them from trying to destroy the United States and Israel.
Will the committee tomorrow be taking a closer look at the information that Netanyahu covered in his press conference last week?
Yes, sir. My understanding is it will, and the members will no doubt go into that information, and there will be a wide, informative discussion about Iran and where they are in 2018 and what their desires are for peace and really for destruction of the West. So we'll have a discussion and cover, I think, a lot of those things, Tony.
Now, did your committee have access to that information prior to that being released just recently?
I did not have access to it before it was released. Now, there may have been other members of the committee, maybe the chairman did, but I did not.
So that's not something the committee had seen prior to the Prime Minister of Israel releasing publicly?
As far as I know, they did not see it, but they individual members, the chairman and maybe the ranking member may have seen it. I don't know, but I did not have access to it before he made those statements.
So, Congressman Poe, any idea what the president may say tomorrow when he makes his announcement regarding the Iran deal?
Well, it's hard to predict what the president will do, but my opinion is he will roll back and reinstigate some of the sanctions, not all of them, but primarily the financial transactions issue with the Iranian Central Bank. I think that's maybe what he will do, prohibit companies from doing business with the bank, prevent money going through the United States from the bank, and any other dealings with the bank. And I think that's what I would guess that's what he would do. And maybe he will do more, maybe he won't do anything, but that'd be my prediction.
Final question for you, Congressman Poe. The seriousness of this threat of a showdown, a direct confrontation between Iran and Israel, how significant?
Well, it's always been tense, and I think it's more tense than ever. The intelligence services of Israel are the best in the world. Netanyahu has said that he's not going to let Iran get to that nuclear capability threshold. The Iranians don't want peace. There lies the real problem, Tony. The only people wanting peace are everybody but the Iranians. The Ayatollah made it clear that he doesn't want peace. He wants war. He wants destruction. It's a tense situation, and I think that maybe the president coming in and imposing more sanctions will cripple the Iranian government from being able to fulfill its goal of developing nuclear weapons and using them. So it's as tense as it's ever been in our lifetime.
Well, let's hope his actions can relieve some of that that tension and pressure. Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, he's going to be retiring at the end of this this Congress. A great American. I've enjoyed getting to know Congressman Poe. We've actually traveled to Israel together. Okay, when we come back, tomorrow's big day. If you live in one of the primary states, North Carolina, West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, some key races on the ballot. Are you prepared? Do you know what you're going to be voting for and whom? Well, coming up next, Scott Rasmussen is going to be with us to help us take a look at tomorrow's primary. First big round of primaries tomorrow. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Tomorrow, Tuesday, primary election season really gets off, gets off in earnest tomorrow. Big races in Indiana, North Carolina, Ohio, and West Virginia. And some of these races getting national attention. With us now is Editor-in-Chief of Ballotpedia, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you. And, you know, you're right. This is the start of the primary season. Just, 8-9 primaries coming up. And up until this point, there's been a lot of talk and speculation about who the nominees will be. We're going to have a lot of clarity very soon.
Okay, so what should we be watching tomorrow?
Tomorrow, the biggest story is in West Virginia. You know, this is a state Donald Trump won by 42 points. The incumbent Senator Joe Manchin has been in office for 36 years. That's long enough back that it used to be a good thing to be a Democrat, but that label is a big drag on him right now. There are three Republicans in the race. You've got Jenkins and Morrissey, who were expected to be the top contenders. Either one of them would probably give Joe Manchin a very competitive race. And then you've got a businessman, a former head of a coal company who was associated with a mining disaster that killed 29 people, spent some time in jail. He said it wasn't justified. Blankenship actually is worrying Republican leaders right now. There are some indications that he may be surging at the end. Simply put, if Blankenship wins tomorrow, Joe Manchin is going to breathe a lot easier. He will probably, the race will probably shift to a leans Democrat or perhaps even a little more strongly in the Democratic favor. So that's the first thing we'll be seeing. And let's be clear, the Republicans need to pick up every Senate seat they can if they want to hold or expand control of the U.S. Senate.
And that's one of the key places they can pick up a Senate, a seat along with Missouri, when they're not up yet. But those
there are five Democrats running for re-election in states that Donald Trump won by double digits. None by a bigger margin than West Virginia at 42 points. But you mentioned Missouri, and Donald Trump won there by 19 points. Claire McCaskill is going to be in for a tough fight, but tomorrow. There's a race in Indiana, another big primary. This is an interesting situation. Joe Donnelly was a surprise winner 6 years ago. Trump won by 19. There are three Republicans who are competing here. The good news for the GOP in Indiana is that any of the three candidates appear positioned to give Donnelly a competitive campaign. The question for the Republicans in Indiana is going to be one of unity. You've got two congressmen, Messer and Rakita, who, I mean, it sounds silly, but they didn't like each other in college. They both went to Wabash College. They had a feud that's been going ever since, and it has been an ugly campaign. More recently, Mike Braun, a businessman who's put $6 million of his own money into the race, appears to have the advantage. And I say appears because polling in primaries, very difficult to do. Nobody's really clear what's happening in the state. This, though, is, again, situation. If the Republicans can unify after a very nasty primary, Joe Donnelly will be in for a serious fight. I would expect that Vice President Pence will play a big role in trying to bring about that unity. And his brother may actually be one of the House nominees right. for the GOP in Indiana. So that's a state, again, that the Republicans are in a little better position, but they have to field good candidates in these races if they want to do well in the Senate. Next big state tomorrow is Ohio. Now, this is there's a couple of different battles going on, both for governor and for senator. And I think the biggest story in Ohio is that the governor, John Kasich, is the biggest never-Trumper of them all. But all of the candidates seeking the Republican nomination have really become never Kasichs. They are running away from him and trying to pledge allegiance and show their support and alignment with Donald Trump.
That's very interesting. I've seen some of the DeWine and the governor's race and Mary Taylor kind of each saying the other was endorsed by Kasich as if it was a kiss of death.
And what they're both trying to ignore is both of them were pledged delegates to John Kasich at the 2016 convention where John Kasich didn't even show up. So, yes, you're right. It is pretty dramatic. And it's, I think DeWine is the favorite here. But not only in the primary, this is a state that while it has been a swing state, Trump's margin of victory here was the biggest in 28 years. There's a lot of reasons for Republicans to feel pretty good in the governor's race. It'll be very competitive if DeWine is a candidate. Probably starts off and at least tilting in the Republican direction in terms of our expectations.
What about the Senate seat there?
Well, sure. On the Senate seat, Senator Braun, another potentially vulnerable Democrat. You've got Jim Renacci, a congressman who is expected to win tomorrow and endorsed by the president. Mike Gibbons, who's also running, a businessman, an outsider, says he was Trump before Trump type of rhetoric. But he appears to be fading at this point. And so I think we're going to see Congressman Renacci making the run. Should be a good campaign. You start off expecting, because of the power of incumbency and because Brown has done a pretty credible job of keeping in touch with his constituents and remembering where he's from, the Democrats will have an advantage going into that Senate race. I think the way I put it is if Republicans win the Senate race in Ohio in November, it is going to be a very good night for the GOP.
I would agree. I would agree. Scott, we're up against a break. I want to get you to come back on later this week if we can. We'll get back with you to kind of analyze the results of tomorrow and see what we can tell from reading the tea leaves, if you will.
I'll look forward to that.
All right, Scott. Always great to talk with you. Scott Rasmussen, Ballotpedia. Excuse me. When we come back, we're going to be shifting gears a little bit. We're going to be talking about something else coming up tomorrow. The International U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom releases their 2018 report on the violators, both state and non-state actors that have been violating religious freedom. We're going to be talking with Travis Weber, director of FRC Center for Religious Liberty, when we return. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch, then your phone calls. So don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, pastors, coming up May the 23rd through the 25th, we have our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing taking place in Washington, D.C. To find out how you can be a part of that, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, tomorrow we talked about the primaries. And so, by the way, if you are in North Carolina, Ohio, Indiana, or West Virginia, I hope that you are prepared and ready to go and vote in these primaries. Very important. Very important every time we've got something on the ballot, candidates, whether it's primary or general election, that you are voting. Okay? So I hope you're prepared to do that. But also tomorrow, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom will formally release their 2018 report on the state and non-state abusers of religious freedom. Now, this is by law, almost 20 years ago, the Congress passed a law creating the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And so they each year compile a report that highlights the nations, the countries that are violating religious freedom or restricting it, and then make recommendations to the State Department. Joining me now to talk about this, give us the highlights of this year's report, is Travis Weber. He is the Director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, so what are we expecting tomorrow? I know we've seen this report, and by the way, folks, you can see it at TonyPerkins.com. What are the new items here on this year's report?
So there's some new and some ongoing items in the report. The report's pretty lengthy, but there's summaries and helpful executive overview sections for folks. You know, they don't need to read the whole thing to get a sense of what's going on. But what we can expect as far as the same, it's a standard a procedure for issuing the report in terms of how it's broken down, addressing the U.S. government's obligation to international rights of religious freedom, and then getting into specifics, addressing country situations, countries of particular concern. Those were specifically focused on. And then also, what's new, in addition to those two sections, which have been the way we've reported this, what's new, the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act, made changes to the way we deal with international religious freedom to deal with the non-state actors that we've seen popping up in recent years. So there's a focus on these entities in addition to traditional states, and then obviously making recommendations for how the U.S. government can deal with this issue going forward.
You know, have we seen any improvements in the last year?
Well, you know, I think it really depends on where you're looking. You know, religious freedom, if you take the issue worldwide and the way just the overview, the landscape of religious freedom around the world, it's dismal as it's been. If you look at the number of places in which religious freedom is restricted, whether moderately or heavily restricted, but if you look at specific locations, there are areas in which we can see some improvement, in other areas which, you know, things seem to be going in the reverse direction. So it really depends on where we're looking, and we need to continue to address a number of different situations around the world.
Yeah, I think what's happened in the last 8 years, the it's kind of gotten out of hand. Of course, we saw the genocide in the Middle East as a result, really, of the I think our lack of leadership on the issue as a country. The United Nations actually stepping in first to declare that genocide in that region of the world. It looks like part of their recommendations is to see a more holistic approach to religious freedom, not just from this commission's findings, but also throughout all of State Department and in its foreign policy, and along with the diplomats being up to speed and understanding the importance of religious freedom.
Yeah, I mean, this is a key point, because we can think about religious freedom in terms of specific situations that are addressed, which we need to address. So when someone's imprisoned right now, Pastor Andrew Brunson's trial is going on in Turkey. These situations like this, we need to focus on them, but ultimately they're going to continue to pop up unless we deal with the issue in the long term. And if we engage with a country in a specific situation, exert pressure on them, but then let them be the next year, the next 5 years, the situation in the long term is still going to be problematic. So this comprehensive approach, I think, is very, very welcome as far as I'm concerned. It's long overdue. And it also lends to the long-term conditions for religious freedom, which are ultimately the real solution here, because unless we cultivate the conditions for people to be able to respect one another's belief and choice of faith and living that out in these countries where there are different groups side by side, we're going to continue to see problems.
Yeah, I think that's an important point here, the recognition that it's an issue of choice. People can choose to have religion, they can choose not to have religion, but it's still a choice, and it's a freedom. It's a freedom to choose. And I think from a Christian standpoint, we understand that man was given a choice, you know, in creation. God created Adam and Eve, gave them a choice. And I think people have that right to choose. And that's what we're fighting for, is the right to either choose or not choose, but not to be forced into one box or excluded from a box. Travis Weber, always great to talk with you. We're gonna probably revisit this week once the report is out, and discuss tomorrow in Washington. We'll follow up with that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty. As I said, we'll take a deeper dive into this later this week, as it's officially released tomorrow. But important topic. I want to return to that when we come back here. And your phone calls here on Washington Watch, so don't go away.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships, and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, Chairman of the Board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, President of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, the phone number, 866-372-7234. Number to call to get in on the conversation this afternoon. 866-372-7234. All right. We've been talking about the Iran nuclear deal, which the president is going to make an announcement about tomorrow. John Kerry's been working overtime, calling to all his international global buddies, trying to box in the president, really, on this and salvage the deal that he and Obama negotiated, which he says is working. According to the information that Netanyahu presented, is not working. Also, coming up tomorrow, primaries starting, a big midterm election, primary season starting. If you, Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, and North Carolina. No Senate race, by the way. We didn't get to North Carolina. No Senate race, but several congressional races that are kind of key there. And we've been talking about the International Religious Freedom, U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, releasing their report tomorrow. The countries like Burma, Central African Republic, China, Eritrea, Iran, Nigeria, North Korea, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Syria, all countries of particular concern, as they call them, and they're seeking to potentially add some more. This is a good thing, because I think what you're going to see under this administration, Sam Brownback as ambassador there, Mike Pompeo, we've been talking about that, as new Secretary of State, I do think you're going to see a more integrated approach to this, because what's happened when you have countries like Saudi Arabia that have been on this list for quite some time, they're identified as abusers, as restricting religious freedom. But nothing else happens. Nothing else throughout the rest of our foreign policy is affected by that understanding. So this integration of these two, I think, is very, very important, and hopefully will lead to religious minorities being protected. Now, as I was saying before the break, and by the way, if you want to call in, 202-624-3080-866-372-7234. I get the number straight there. People have a choice. And this is not about forcing people to, go down one path from a religious orientation, which is the problem we have a lot in the Middle Eastern countries. You're born into a family that has a certain religious affiliation, and you can't change it. And the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights makes very clear that religious freedom is a human right, and that includes the ability to change your religion, to live according to your religion, which, by the way, I would say under the Obama administration, and even the United States was violating the, if not the letter, certainly the intent of the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights by restricting the ability of Christians to live in this country according to their faith. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Joe in Delaware, Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for all that you do. And I'd like just a couple quick points. Only a liberal idiot like John Kerry could watch the presentation by Benjamin Netanyahu and think the deal is a good deal and working. That's the first thing I'd like to say. Secondly, you just touched on it. Important primaries here in the Rust Belt, Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, North Carolina. We got early voting in Ohio today, and of course tomorrow is the primary. I'd like to encourage all the Christian conservatives to get out in these four states. We've got some good conservative candidates in Ohio. We've also got the establishment candidates in Ohio. So we need to make sure we're supporting the conservative candidates. Look at who the Freedom Caucus is endorsing. Look at who the Tea Party is endorsing. And Trump won all four of these states. We can pick up houses in both the Senate and the pick up seats in both the House and the Senate in these four states. So thanks for all that you do, and keep beating the drum.
All right, Joe, thanks for calling in, and thanks for the reminder. It's as I said earlier, it's important to always vote. But one of the factors going into this midterm election is intensity. It's something I always measure in elections, the intensity. And on the conservative side, there seems to be a little loss of that intensity. And people may be saying, well, you know what, Congress hasn't delivered. I don't really care about these members of Congress. And in fact, the polling numbers for Congress is dismal. But this is not just about Congress. Okay, this is about the conservative agenda. This is about the president being able to follow through on the commitments he's made, the policies he's pushing forward. I mean, look at all that he's been able to do by himself, for the most part, having Congress in many cases working against him, like the repeal of Obamacare. But just think if not only did he have a, if it were just a Republican Party that were not so enthused and energetic and supportive, but a Democratic Party in the majority that was actually working against him, what would that be? So anyway, you need to go out and vote for candidates that align most closely with your values, and keep in mind the big picture. Okay, 866-372-7234. By the way, you may have heard this news, but the NRA and their annual meeting, the board of directors chose Ollie North to be the organization's president. That's good news. Great American hero there. So they've got a battle on their hands with all the efforts against the Second Amendment. So I think Ollie's a good one to pick to be at the helm during this time of great challenge. Again, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation this afternoon. We were talking earlier with Ted Poe regarding the increasing tensions against Iran and Israel. And there are more and more reports coming out that Iran is preparing missile strikes against Israel. This is a, and you know, all the stuff coming up next week, move of the embassy, a lot of focus on Israel. It's a lot. This is a time to be praying. Let me put it that way. All right, let's go to Hunter in Longview, Texas. Hunter, welcome to Washington Watch. Hunter, you there? Yep, I think we lost him. All right, well, let's see if we can get him back. Anyway, as we were talking about this increasing level of tensions between Iran and Israel, you know, there's been kind of a surrogate battle going on in Syria. Security foreign policy experts are concerned that this could break out into a direct confrontation, which could get pretty ugly pretty quick if that occurs. And, you know, some are saying that President Trump's announcement of moving the embassy to Jerusalem is only going to increase the tensions in that region, while others are saying, no, it's a bold move, which is actually going to show strength, which is something that that part of the world understands more than anything, is a show of strength. So next week is going to be very telling as to how that all unfolds. All right, we have Hunter there. Hunter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, it's an honor to talk to you. I usually talk to your compadre on Fridays right before Shabbat. So I enjoyed the show. I was just telling you, call screener. You know, as believers, we should look to what happened with Israel bossing right out of Iran with secret documents and to basically do it overnight. And to do that, that is nothing. If anybody has any questions as to whether or not God is with the Jewish people today, what we saw was nothing short of a miracle. And it's just one in long series of miracles, whether we read them in the Bible, whether we've read them in the news since Israel, you know, formed a country again back in the 1940s. I mean, it was unprecedented. And I can tell you, I'm 45 years old, and I've seen BB do briefings of the United Nations, but Tony, I've never seen anything like that. That was the most, you know, pardon the expression, that was the most damning evidence I've seen against Iran in my entire life. And, you know, for somebody like John Kerry or other people to try to salvage that deal, if you even want to call it that, we all knew it was ridiculous back then, is just, it's unconscionable. And frankly, speaking as somebody who's Jewish myself, I'm a believer, but I'm Jewish, that deal was 100% anti-Semitic. And I only thank God that it didn't turn the Jewish people against our nation, which would have been very damaging for us spiritually.
Yeah. Hunter, thanks so much for the call. I have to agree with you when you look at, well, number one, I have worked with some of the folks that have been in the Mossad back in years ago, and they are some of the best. So I'm not, it is an amazing feat what they did, but if there was any intelligence organization that could do it, it would be the Mossad. But there is really a plethora of examples of how God has brought this nation back together after 1,900 years of not existing, bringing them back together into the homeland, speaking the Hebrew tongue, and then, you know, taking a barren wasteland, which is all that was left, and making it one of the most prosperous, or the most prosperous, in the Middle East, is both from a natural resources standpoint, but also from an intellectual standpoint. All they're doing in electronics and technology, it is an amazing story, and God's hand is clearly upon that nation, and for that reason, I think America should be in line with them, and that's why I've applauded the president in the United States recognizing what already exists, and that is the fact that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. All right, Let's go to let's try to work another call or two here. Let's go to Kim in Burlington, Iowa. Kim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, maybe another petition should be started similar to the Target against Amazon for their Amazon Smile program because of them using the Southern Poverty Law Center as their determination on who should be
right.
using the program.
Yeah, good point, Kim. I don't know that I've talked about it on the program yet, but something came up last week with the Smile program, which is their charitable kind of give back, and Alliance Defending Freedom. And they booted Alliance Defending Freedom from the program because they said that they were unqualified because they were a hate group based upon the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a Southern Poverty Law Center is a joke. This is a left-wing attack group that actually motivated the shooter that came into our building about 6 years ago and shot one of our people. There's some discussion as to what might be the action steps there with Amazon. Clearly, as folks who I'll be very candid. I don't get out to stores very often, and I've grown very accustomed to using Amazon Prime, but I'm ditching it. I'm giving it up. And looking at another alternative to doing that because of clearly their choice to align with a politically motivated leftist organization to harm conservatives. So, Kim, you're absolutely right. It is something that a coalition is looking at, but at a minimum, you know, folks, if you have the Amazon Prime, you should consider looking at alternative mail sources for that. Kim, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. I don't get out much. I don't have time to go shopping, and so it's much easier to do stuff online. I do almost everything online, and so you get accustomed to the ease of Amazon. But I've been reading a lot about Amazon and their treatment of their employees. I mean, Google that. If you've not seen those stories, it's amazing. And then you see these how poorly they treat their employees. And you see these governments, city governments, state governments, tripping over themselves to give tax benefits to try to bring Amazon to their communities, that they're going to create all these great jobs. I mean, great jobs that people don't even have time to go to the bathroom. They have to relieve themselves in a bottle at their workstation. I don't know about you, but that's not the kind of jobs I want to create for people in my community. All right. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but Lord willing, there's tomorrow, and I hope you'll be back and join us again. Until next time, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. And remember this, as the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 6, says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.